Kelly.
Thanks, Shelley. My name's Justin and I'm an addict. Yeah, it's good to be back at this meeting. I used to have a commitment over when we had the meeting on the other side. And my commitment was to buzz people in. And it was a homeless shelter. And the amount of times I upset people by telling them, sorry mate, the homeless shelter's not open yet. And they'd be like, I'm here for the meeting. And I felt like, whoops. So yeah, it's good to be back here. I just talk brief about my using. You know, like probably most people here, I started using when I was sort of 12, 13 with my mates. And unlike my mates, you know, when they sort of stopped using or go home, I always wanted to stay out. I always wanted to use more. And I never really had any idea about a disease of addiction or anything like that. I just thought I enjoyed using. That was all the thought. I just thought, oh, I love getting out of my head. And, you know, that went on for a few years. And the consequences of my using sort of kicked in very early. You know, when I was at school, I started using. My school started to suffer. I sort of scraped through, went to college, then I ended up dropping out of college because of me using. I got a job, I lost that because of me using. And, you know, it was like it sort of kept repeating it. You know, I kept sort of losing jobs, moving about. I had to move out of my mum and dad's because of my using. And I was only quite young. And I never thought it was because of my using. It was, you know, I had to stop using. I always thought, oh, if I can just use somewhere else or use differently. Until eventually it got so much out of control that I thought I need to do something drastic. And, you know, I need to get away. I thought, where can I go? I'll go somewhere, you know, where I can get away from drugs. So I came to London. And that was, you know, that was a really good idea. And I remember sort of, I did a lot of musing around here. I came to London and I remember sort of, I didn't really know anyone. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I just came down here, but had a little bit of money. And I saw some guy begging outside a shop on Leicester Square. And I struck up a conversation with him. And he was saying, and I was like, what are you doing here? He was from Manchester, so we ended up chatting. And he was like, oh, I'm begging to get money for drugs. And then I thought, you know, that seemed like a great idea. So I joined him, I used with him. And then, you know, the next thing I knew, I was begging with him. And what happened from then on was I sort of, in Manchester, I'd always had this sort of facade of normality where I'd look like I was trying to keep things together. I'd had a job or I'd living at home. And ended up just completely sort of just throwing everything away and just using. That was it. You know, I was staying in homeless shelters. I was sleeping rough. I was committing crime. It was like as soon as I woke up, the obsession to use was on me and nothing else mattered. There was no sort of pretending to be, you know, normal or whatever. It was just about using. And again, you know, I'd never understood about this disease. I just, in my head, I just thought, oh, I've got a bit of a drug problem or whatever. And I never sort of looked at why I used or anything like that. I just carried on using. And my sort of first efforts to get clean, I wouldn't even say they were to get clean. They were just to sort of change my consequences, I'd say. I remember one of the first times, actually, I was just talking to someone before the meeting about it, was around here I was using. And I remember it'd taken me all day to get the money to use. And I'd used, and it hadn't done anything. Because in my using, I'd gone from sort of enjoying drugs to getting to the point where the best I could hope for from drugs was to feel less shit than when I wasn't using. I didn't feel good, I just felt less shit when I was using than I did when I wasn't. And I'd used and it had done absolutely nothing. And I'd got to the point as well where I was wanted by the police. So I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to hand myself in, I'm going to go to prison and I'll sort my head out. So I walked into Charing Cross Police Station and I said, you know, I'm wanted. I gave my name and they said, right, yeah, come in. Put me in a cell and I thought, right, great. And then after about 35 seconds, I thought, you know what, I've changed my mind here. I don't think I fancy this. Don't fancy going to jail. I think I'd rather go out there and use. But unfortunately, I couldn't talk my way out of it. And those were the sort of things that I did. You know, I eventually ended up in prison. And in jail, I got a little bit clean. I was on a drug-free wing for a little while. I remember getting sort of 2 months without using. And thinking, you know what, I've cracked it, I'm never going to use it. This is where I didn't think I'd never use it, but I thought, right, I'm okay now. And then the day I got transferred to a different prison, I used that day. You know, the only way I could sort of get anything was, even when they took drugs away from me, it was physically impossible for me to get drugs. All that did was postpone it until I could get drugs. It didn't make me, you know, keep me clean or anything like that. It just postponed my using. And that sort of carried on for some years, you know, when I was sort of in and out of trouble, flitting between Manchester and London, you know, sort of my consequences were getting worse. And eventually I ended up back in court. I ended up back in court near here. And the judge sort of, he gave me a choice basically. Either go to a detox or go to jail. And I chose to go to a detox purely and simply because it seemed preferable than going to prison. And I remember sort of reality kicking in this detox because I'd always been, you know, sort of using and out of my head or whatever. I remember getting in this detox and sort of, you know, the drugs weren't off and I was getting clean or whatever. And sort of reality kicked in and I remember looking in the mirror and seeing this sort of skeleton looking back at me. I'll never forget, I had all the everything I owned was in a bag, and I took it out and I'd hung it up on the closet that they gave me in this detox room, and all I could see was empty coat hangers. There was like three coat hangers with something on, and the rest were all empty, and that was everything I owned. And this skeleton was looking back at me, and I just thought, you know, I can't go on like this. And I was very fortunate that NA came into my detox. They came in, and I didn't even want to go to the meeting. I was watching telly, and someone said NA are coming in. I didn't know what NA was, and I wasn't interested. And they said, you know, we want you to attend the meeting. And I was sort of sat there, and I heard this guy came in, and he shared. I could relate to his story. I could relate what he was talking about. Because my experience of getting clean had been sort of through... I'd done a bit of counselling where I'd gone to a counsellor, and I'd said, I remember going to a counsellor on Portobello Road to try and get clean off drugs, or to try and what I call, you know, change my consequences or sort me out. And what this counsellor said to me, she gave me a drug, what's called a drug diary, and she said, I want you to fill this in. And what you do is you write down each day what you use, and the next day you try and use less. So I thought, right, yeah. So I put this diary in my pocket. I remember it. I put it in my pocket, and I went away for a week, and I came back the next week, and on the way there, I filled it in and I wrote, used 14 times Monday, used 13 times Tuesday, used 12 times Wednesday, you know, until I got to the day I was seeing it, I barely used, and I went in and I went, you know, here it is. And she went, oh, this is fantastic, great stuff. And the insanity was, I left there thinking, I'm doing really well. Keep it up, man. I'm not thinking I've just made all that up. So yeah, that was my experience of sort of dealing with people that helped you get clean or helped to you know, to sort of control using or whatever. And this was different. This was someone who, when he was sharing, I could relate to what he was saying about his consequences. I could relate to what he was saying about the situations he got in. And then he said something that I couldn't relate to. He said, I'm 8 years clean. And I remember at the end of the meeting, sort of pulling him to one side and saying, you know, what do you mean you're 8 years clean? I just couldn't get my head around that. And he said, I don't use. And I said, so you just smoke weed? He went, no, I don't use. So I said, so you just have a drink now and again? He went, no, I don't. I almost pecked his head. I was just like, and then he said, total abstinence. And I said, how did you get 8 years clean? And he said, well, you know, one day at a time. And that stayed with me. I thought, you know what, 8 years is quite scary, you know, when you're new around, or any sort of, for me anyway, a long time without using, let alone never using again, was a scary thought. But the thought of just getting through the day, not using, was something I thought that, you know, maybe I can do that. And that's what I did. And from there, I went to a rehab. And then from rehab, we started going to meetings. And it was a complete learning curve for me, NA, because everything it teaches you in NA is completely different to when it was using. You know, you talk about honesty, and when I was using, it was all about being dishonest, deviant. And when, you know, you look at the steps, and it's like, we admitted, when I was like, well, you don't admit anything, you know, came to believe a power greater than ourselves, there is no power greater than me, God, no, you know, it was just like a list of to-don'ts, almost. So I had to get my head around that. And then I remember going to a meeting and seeing someone making the brews, and at the end, they took money off the treasurer. And I remember sort of saying to him, how much do you get paid for doing the brews? And he said, no, it's service, you know, we do it for nothing. I'm just getting my money back from the milk. And it was things like that. It was all a learning curve, because I couldn't get my head around doing things, you know, for free or whatever, or not having some sort of, you know, reward. And I realised that this, what he was doing and what, you know, everything we're doing in it keeps you clean. Excuse me, keeps you clean. So eventually I, you know, I did 1990. I got a sponsor. I took up a service position, and my life began to get gradually better. You know, I got relationships in my life. I rebuilt a relationship with my mum and dad. I went to college. I learned how to drive. I got all these things, and then something happened. I was in London all the time. I was doing a lot of meetings in London, and I started to go home for the summer. And I started to hang around with some of my old friends. And I can make as many excuses as I want, but the fact is I stopped doing this stuff. You know, I've got a load of new shiny things, and I thought I was getting better. And I just stopped doing it. I'd always been in the middle. You know, people used to say to me, get in the middle of recovery. And I'd always been like that. I'd always had loads of friends who were in recovery. I'd done loads of meetings. I'd done loads of service. I had a sponsor. I had sponsees. I did the steps. And I gradually edged away from everything. I stopped doing meetings. Some of my service commitments came to an end. I didn't get any more service commitments. I stopped soaking in the sponsor, and eventually, before I knew it, I used. And you know, it was you know, for a few months, I sort of, things weren't too bad. You know, I picked up a drink and I sort of got away with it. Until eventually, I started going back. You know, my life started, and all these things had taken me years to get, because it took me along. You know, a few years. I was a few years clean. It didn't take me years to lose them. It took weeks and months before all of a sudden. Before I knew it, I was sort of on the kitchen floor in my flat, crying, rooting through my bins, because I thought I might have something in a wrap that I'd thrown away, you know, 4 days ago or whatever. But fortunately for me, you know, I knew about NA. I knew that NA existed. And I went to a meeting, and, you know, I went to a meeting 13 months ago, and I haven't used since. I went into that meeting, thank you, I went into that meeting, and the ego kicks in, you know, when I don't know, you know, some people, you know, you go back to a meeting, and the last time I was at a meeting, I was, my ego telling me you were a few years clean, and this, that, and the other, and you had sponsors, and now you're back here getting a mic hearing, you know, and there was none of that. I got to the meeting, I was welcomed back in, it was a meeting I'd never done before, I was made to feel welcome, I got a mic hearing, and it just felt right, you know, it felt like I was where I needed to be. And I remember ringing my mum, and I said to her, I've gone back to NA. And she said, when are you getting to step 9? That was the first thing she said to me. Which was fair enough. Because she knew about recovery, and she knew what I was like in recovery, and she knew what I was like out of recovery, and she knew which one she preferred. As every, you know, as all my close friends and my family did. So this time around, you know, I've tried to do things, I wouldn't even say different, I've tried to do as much as I can and stay with it and just keep being honest. Because, you know, I often hear people say, oh, I don't know if I've got another relapse in me, I don't know if I've got another recovery in me or whatever, but I don't know if I have, but I know that for a fact, you know, my friends and my family, they haven't got one in them. They haven't got the time to keep seeing me going through this and doing this over and over again, you know, so I want to stay clean. And just in the 30 months that I have stayed clean, my life has gone, it's gone back to better than it ever was, really. You know, I've got relationships in my life, I've got friends, you know, my friends in my life that I'd sort of lost through my using, I've got them back, and I've got some other friends who are in recovery. You know, I've built up a relationship with my family that's really strong, and, you know, career-wise, I've done things that I've always wanted to do. You know, I'm a reporter, and I've been able to do some interview people that I've always looked up to. And when I was using, I never would have had those responsibilities. I never would have been given that. You know, I was at a meeting this morning, it talks about Beyond Your Wildest Dreams in the Just For Today reading. And that is beyond my wildest dreams, because, you know, 13 and a half months ago, I was on my kitchen floor crying, debating in my head whether to go to a meeting or kill myself. That was actually what I was thinking. I was thinking, do I want to go on like this? Do I, you know, am I not cut out for life? And I realised that was nonsense. It's just, I'm not cut out for using. I can't do it, and I don't want to do it. And I know that with this programme, I don't have to use. I know that because I've seen the evidence. You know, I've seen the evidence in myself, and I've seen the evidence in other people that have been around a lot longer than I have, and have, you know, have shown me the way. Because I'm quite fortunate that, you know, I didn't have to go out and start a meeting. I didn't have to go out and write the literature. It was already there for me. I just had to go to a meeting and listen to people and connect with people. And since doing that, you know, I've tapped into a power that on a daily basis has kept me clean. You know, and it's, we always talk about the ripple effects of that. And that ripple effects of me staying clean, you know, it reverberates throughout everyone that knows me. And today, you know, I'm a much better person than I was sort of 13 and a half months ago. But I know that I need to do this on a daily basis. You know, I need to sort of speak to my sponsor. I need to do the steps. I need to do service. And I need to attend meetings. And if I find myself taking the foot off the pedal, I'm fortunate that I've got people around me, I've got close friends around me that can sort of give me that kick up the arse that I need, you know, that can tell me, you know, we need to step up, or we can go to a meeting together. And that's sometimes what I need as well, because sometimes I can struggle, sometimes I can have no trouble ringing my mate, and then when it comes to ringing my sponsor, if I get the answer phone, I'm like buzzing, I'm like, great, I don't have to talk to him. And I don't know why that is, it's daft, because we get on really well, but it's just sometimes I do have to sort of get motivated. So like I did before, you know, put myself right back in the middle of this, and this stuff works, you know, it really does, and you know, it's, the proof is there. And how long have I got left?
Oh, 30 seconds.
Alright, 30 seconds, well, I'll end on this. You know, I've shared this a few times, but I live with a couple of dogs, you know, and these dogs, they, when they're hungry, they eat. When they're cold, they come inside and they stay in a warm bed and they get looked after, you know. I live with my mates and they're their dogs and they love them. You know, and these dogs have a better life than I had when I was using. You know, and if I don't come here, having a life not as good as a dog will seem appealing to me. So I don't, I just come here and take each day at a time, and I'll leave it there, thanks.